going to have, if you haven't heard her before, Jane Hersey on our show, and she is a former teacher and Head Start consultant. She's been the director of the Feingold Association since 1985. She's the author of Why Can't My Child Behave? And Healthier Food for Busy People, both of which have been recommended by the Washington Post, and she's also the editor of the association's newsletter, Pure Facts. Jane Hersey has testified before the National Institutes of Health, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Congress, and has lectured at educational associations, hospitals, medical groups, and universities, and she frequently presents at workshops at schools. And for those of you who have not heard her on our show before, she's been on several times, and today we have her on because it's back to school, and we wanted to get her on to talk about additives in school lunches and just additives in that are affecting our children and their ability to learn and grow and behave and all of those important things, and how that is impacted by the foods that they're eating. So let me see if I can get Jane on the line. One moment, please.
Julie?
Yes, Jane, with us.
Here I am.
Hello, great.
You know, that was an interesting juxtaposition. Additives and attitudes are very much related. They're so connected. I love it.
I know. I thought that was a kind of funny slip of the tongue myself. So you have a new issue of your edition of your book that came out recently. So, if for those who haven't read it before, it's Why Can't My Child Behave, and it's by Jane Hersey. And can you tell me what's new in the new issue?
Well, the new issue focuses on some of the newer studies that have come out in just a few years, recent years, and it's very exciting to see scientific documentation of the sorts of things that parents and doctors and other professionals and teachers have been observing in the children. The work is being done, and there's a lot of work being done in England. One of the studies that we found particularly interesting was where the researchers studied the effects of more than one additive when they're combined.
Mm.
Usually the additives are studied individually, but all you have to do is look in a child's lunchbox or cereal bowl, and you will see there are many different food colorings. And by the way, those are made from petroleum, the synthetic ones.
Mm-hmm.
There are artificial flavorings, monosodium glutamate, aspartame, etc. So what these researchers did was found out what happens when you test more than one additive, and they found two additives together that the damage was many, many times greater than when a nerve cell was exposed to a single additive.
Wow. I am so glad they're finally doing some research, because the same thing applies to pesticides and all sorts of other chemicals that they're usually tested on grown men and one at a time. So I'm glad to hear that people are finally doing some appropriate studies. But I have a question for you, which is, were these studies done on children or were they still done on adults?
No, actually, I'm sorry, I should have made it a little more clear. The work that I'm referring to was done at the University of Liverpool, and apparently one of the methods that scientists use in order to test whether a pesticide or something like that is going to be damaging, or a food additive, is that they apply it to nerve cells of animals. And it's quite different, I understand, than a child eating a food additive. However, it's good science, and it's very, very interesting what they found. They found that when MSG, blue dye, aspartame, and yellow dye were introduced to the cells individually, that they had damaging effects. However, when they combined two of these, the blue plus the MSG, and applied it to nerve cells, the damage was four times as great, and then when they combined the aspartame with the yellow dye, the damage was seven times as great. Now, this is still suggestive, but what it does suggest is that when a child ingests these, if this holds true, and we believe it does, that not only will these additives be liable to stunt nerve cell growth, but that they can interfere with the signaling from one nerve to the next. They as one doctor told me, it's like short-circuiting the brain.
Mm.
So, it's sad that these additives are being given to so many children when we don't know enough about them. All of this research and the research into the behavior, how these chemicals affect behavior. All of this research should have been done before the additives ever went into our food supply, but it goes the other way around, as I'm sure you very well know.
Yes, I do. But I would love to refresh people that haven't heard or inform people that haven't heard of this, because most people assume that if it's on the shelf, of course, it's safe. So maybe you can explain how they got into the food supply without being tested as safe.
Well, a lot of these additives were grandfathered in. There were, around the turn of the last century, about 100 years ago, there were many different food dyes, and most of them have either been banned as health hazards or were discarded by the industry. But those few hardy survivors which have remained were just allowed to stay there. And there are an occasional, like Red 40 is a newer additive. It's not as old. All you have to do is look at the numbers, and if you see Red number 3, you know that that's been around for a long time, and yellow 5 and 6 are among the older additives. But another thing to look at when you look at the numbers, there are only two red dyes that are still allowed to be put in food, red 3 and red 40. Now, that's an awful lot of missing numbers.
What happened to those other 35?
Well, some of them have been discarded, and all of them except for those two are not allowed in food. But here's the really scary part. Just because they're taken out of food doesn't mean that they're not that we're done with them. For example, yellow number 10, which is not allowed in food, is used to dye the stimulant Ritalin.
Oh no.
Which is given to children who are reacting to food additives.
Oh no.
And some of the red dyes, I believe it's red 28. There are two red dyes. One is red 28. One of them is used to kill marijuana crops, and another one is used to kill the med fly. So, and of course, red number 3, which is still in food, is known to cause thyroid cancer, so therefore it's illegal. And for many years, the Food and Drug Administration tried to get rid of it, but there's where we run into politics and money. And politics and money tends to trump whatever else is out there, and so politics and money won out. Red number 3 has not been banned. It's still known to cause thyroid tumors, cancerous thyroid tumors. And here's another nifty thing about red 3. It doubles as a pesticide. Yes, it's used to spray on manure piles to kill maggots, to kill flies' eggs.
So we know that it's a poison. We know that it causes thyroid cancer, and yet we're still using it.
That's right. Now, the FDA, in their wisdom years ago, banned it from being allowed to use it in the wax coatings on cheese, but it's still allowed to be put in food. Now, you know what, Julie? I'd rather not even go there. I haven't a clue what they were thinking of.
Maybe that wax coating on the cheese was a delicacy somewhere.
Yeah, could be. have a slab of wax.
Oh, boy. So what is red number 3 still used in, so people know?
Oh, my goodness, it's used in so many things. The major use, the major reason why the industry did not want to get rid of it is because it's the only dye that they can use on maraschino cherries in fruit cocktail. Now, this is an earth-shaking...
This is important.
Yeah, oh, I tell you.
What are we going to do without those little red cherries?
If they try to use red 40 in the fruit cocktail, then the red dye will bleed off and get on the pears and the peaches and stuff, and heaven forbid we couldn't have that.
Right.
And, of course, we couldn't take the maraschino cherries out of the fruit cocktail. Or
what would it be? It wouldn't be a real cocktail that way.
Yeah, a Molotov cocktail. Or replace them with real cherries. Yeah, that's the main thing that really upset the industry, and they even did research, and it wasn't just the cherry growers, but the peach and pear growers were very upset because they said, we're going to lose, you know, customers. But you know what? Really, you can get along with that.
And why don't they use real cherries, like you mentioned?
Well, yes, they could. A real cherry would not give that intensity of color, and see, one of the reasons why food companies love to use these bright colors is they are very intense, and they're very inexpensive for the company. So they, you know, the attitude is the more the better, the brighter the better, bigger, better, brighter, et cetera. And So instead of having something that's a little more subtle color, they use the bright colors. A good example of the use of food dyes to sell more products is a number of years ago. Do you remember when the green ketchup first
came out? Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, here you have a very inexpensive additive, although they certainly had to use an awful lot of green dye to turn red ketchup green. But the media publicity, the free publicity they got from that was amazing. And they sold more ketchup and they made more money. That's what it's about.
Which is so funny because don't kids usually not like green things anyway?
Yep. Well, I think so, but, you know, I think after a while...
Why don't we just give them broccoli instead?
That's right. Absolutely. And by the way, green ketchup is not made from green tomatoes. They take red tomatoes and they have to turn red into green. And having been an art teacher, I can tell you it takes a lot of dye to turn red into green.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's bizarre. That's one of the reasons why I so enjoyed writing my little book, Healthier Food for Busy People, because there are so many weird, strange, peculiar things that are going on in food processing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really start to find out about them, they're really very funny. If they weren't hurting so many people,
right,
it'd be fun.
So, do you have any sense, why do we feed all of these colors to kids? I mean, out of all the people that get all of this junk and the artificial flavors and the colors, 95% of it is all marketed to kids. And I don't even know if you'll know the answer to this, but why is that? Is there some study that these colors are more attractive in some way? Because they're not natural, so I would think that, you know, why would they appeal to children if they...
I think they really, honestly, I think they appeal more to the parents. And I think that parents have, because we've seen this among our members, we've been doing this for 30 years now, and we've seen among our members how the parents seem to be really hooked on the idea of presenting these things to children, because people associate bright colors with happy things and childhood, and, you know, there are a lot of emotional connections to bright colors. Now, again, having been an art teacher, I love bright colors, but if I'm going to have a dye that's made from petroleum, as these are, I'm going to want to see it in paintings and fabrics and, you know, my car, but I'm not going to want to eat it. And I think the adults assume, and doting aunts and uncles and grandparents and teachers assume that children just have to have this stuff. And sure, they're bombarded with ads from TV and all, and many of the children buy into it. But, you know, the kids that we help and the families we help, these are bright children. And as soon as they understand, these are chemicals that are bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
They're made from icky things. The companies put them in there to fool us, to make us think the food is really better than it is. They put them in there to make more money, save on their costs, but they don't cut the cost of the product.
Right.
And it's not fair. You know, from a child's point of view, this is wrong. These are grown-ups who are doing things that are bad, that are hurting children.
Mm.
And I tell you, the kids turn off to this in a hurry. We don't have as much trouble with children giving these things up than we do with grown-ups. And my favorite little story about this is the mom. She'd been on the Feingold program. She had her 5-year-old daughter with her, and they were out shopping. And she passed a little kind of a carousel filled with all different kinds of candy. And the mom stopped, not because she wanted to buy it, but she wanted to look at the ingredient labels. You know, after you've done this for a while, that's the first thing you do. You flip it over, look at the ingredients. Well, she stopped, paused there to pick up the candy and look at it. The little 5-year-old turns around and says to her, "Mama, don't even think about it." So the kids are great.
Wow.
And when they realize, they feel better.
Yes.
And they don't, mom and daddy don't yell at them, and the teacher doesn't, you know, they don't get in trouble in school, and they get good grades. We, our October newsletter is almost done, and we're going to have a wonderful story in that about a boy who was 9 years old, having terrible problems in school. He was kind of a gloomy child. He called himself dumb. He also suffered from frequent rashes. He hated school. He had trouble paying attention. He had trouble learning. And he had so much trouble that his teacher would have an aide taken out of the classroom and read test instructions to him because she was sure he couldn't understand it. Well, after eating a batch of way, way overly colored, overly flavored popcorn at the mall, you know, that yellow junk paper, well, they put way too much. And after he'd had some, he broke out from head to foot in hives. His mother rushed him home. She took him to the doctor. They found out it was yellow number 5. And of course, the other dyes are just as bad. They got rid of all of that stuff, and he had to be home for about 2 weeks getting over the hives.
Wow.
By that time, his mom had totally renovated their pantry, put only fine gold safe food in, and in 4 weeks, this was a boy who loved school, who helped, and this is amazing. I mean, kids improve, but this is really fast. By that time, he was helping his older sister with her math homework.
Wow.
This summer, he was in a camp for gifted children where at he's 12 now. He mastered 11th grade science, and he's going into a gifted school.
Wow.
Now, the parents said in 4 days they could see a difference. And you know what? This child who was this moody, glum child who was never happy is a very happy child now.
Amazing.
And what's even funnier, normally when we do these stories, we have a photo and we use the real names and all of that. We very rarely ever withhold a person's name. But in this boy's case, he didn't want his photo, and he didn't want to be identified in the story. You know why? Because he said, if the kids find out how smart I am, they'll treat me differently.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. We have, now this again, this is not typical. Normally a child doesn't do a total turnaround, going from learning disabled to gifted in a matter of a couple of weeks. But it does happen, and it's a lot of fun when it does.
So his, I'm guessing his parents just didn't know the dangers of these, and then it just took an extreme.
They didn't have any idea. I mean, they felt, you know, as you had said earlier, this is how most people feel and how I used to feel. And that is that if it could hurt us, the government would allow it. I mean, let's face it, isn't that what the FDA is paid to do? Isn't that their job?
You would think.
But you know, as I joke around and tell people, I used to believe that, but that was back in the 40s and 50s when doctors were endorsing cigarettes in advertising. So, unfortunately, you know, a consumer shouldn't have to worry about this. You should be able to go into any supermarket or any restaurant and be comfortable that the food won't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not talking about allergies. Of course, people have allergies. But most people assume that. But the sad thing is that's not happening at all.
Right.
And our kids are so much more vulnerable. You were talking about the worst stuff going to children. Well, you're absolutely right. And the worst medicine is what's given to children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, adults are not given fluorescent, neon-colored, pink, bubblegum-flavored medicine in a liquid sugary syrup that, you know, an adult gets a capsule or something.
Right.
But the little guys, and is there anybody who is more vulnerable than a sick child?
No.
It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. So speaking of yellow number 5, since we're on that topic right now, I'm reading an excerpt here from your book about In a Pickle. And one of your parents asked why they didn't offer a synthetic yellow dye free pickle.
Yes.
And this is the response from the company, which I find fascinating. Our pickle recipes are based upon a product mix found in homemade old-fashioned pickles. Many of our ingredients used in the old days would be extremely expensive if used today. Therefore, we use safe, approved, and cost-effective alternatives. This allows us to sell our product at reasonably competitive prices. And then I love that there's a little comment then by you that says, in other words, they use an old-fashioned recipe, but don't use the ingredients in the recipe.
And, you know, you can go into any natural food store and even some of the more upscale supermarkets and find pickles without yellow dye. It's not necessary at all.
Ugh.
And companies love to give you the impression that when they save money, they will pass the cost savings on to you.
Right.
And I've been buying my favorite all-natural cereal. It's been on sale lately for $2.50 a box. And try to find a box of Junko cereal in a supermarket for $2.50.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the exciting thing about what we're doing is you can have food that tastes better, that's better for you, it's delicious, And you can save money buying this stuff.
Yes.
The highly processed foods are not cheaper. They're much more expensive.
Right. And you're paying a lot for all those ads that they do on Saturday mornings during cartoons.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah, I read that Oreo, their annual advertising budget for Oreo cookies is, I believe, $41 million
cookies. And, you know, everybody knows Oreos, and if they're going to eat Oreos, they're going to eat it anyway. Why do we need to advertise more?
I think what happens is that by the time the consumer pays the full price for these types of products, these highly processed name brand products, there's so much money left over that, you know, they can easily afford to spend that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right.
But there are so many cookies that look like these. There are at least five companies that are making chocolate sandwich cookies now that are absolutely wonderful. And they're usually less expensive.
And not filled with all of the junk.
You don't have to have fake vanilla, imitation vanilla flavoring in chocolate.
No, in fact, guess what? It tastes better without it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, since we're back to school here, you know, we got a general sense of these nerve toxins and things, but I'd love to apply to some of the childhood disorders and imbalances we see in school, from asthma to ADHD and some of those things. I'd love to maybe start with asthma since
Asthma, you know, the crazy thing about asthma, Julie, is that with supposedly new and better medical treatment, we should be seeing a decline in asthma, and the opposite is true. Asthma, the it's really called an epidemic. It's not even an increase. The increase in asthma among adults and children has just gone off the scales. And if you talk to somebody who taught school or who attended school, about a generation or two ago, it was very rare to see a child who had asthma. And when I was going through school, I remember one child who was asthmatic. And today, my goodness, you go in the average classroom and there are nebulizers all over the place. Why is asthma increasing? Well, some people say, well, stress. Yeah, tell me about it. Stress. If stress were the reason, the mothers of these children would be asthmatic. And then they say, well, dogs and cats and milk and pollen. Now, come on. Dogs, cats, milk, and pollen, you know, they're not new.
No.
They've been around for quite a while.
A lot longer than we have.
Absolutely. But the one thing they're not looking at is right under their nose. And one doctor came out with a very interesting observation. He said that children in poor countries do not typically suffer from asthma. It's children in wealthy countries who do. Now, of course, children in poor countries may suffer from a variety of other health problems, but asthma is not a big one.
Mm.
Now, what is going on? Now, of course, there can be things in the environment, polluted air, absolutely, but there's something else going on because these children who have asthma don't necessarily live in areas where the air is polluted, and we know that the additives are directly related to asthma. If you look at the allergy literature even a couple decades ago, it connects things like yellow dye, red dye, et cetera, with asthma. And that's the reason, years ago, why the FDA initially required food dyes to be labeled on packages, because they recognized that that dyes, and yellow seems to be the most notorious, but they're all terrible, they recognized that these can be a problem, and then back not long after that, in the mid-80s, the American Academy of Pediatrics took a closer look at the dyes that are being used in medicine, and they found the most typical reaction health problem that people had from these dyes was a variety of respiratory problems. So it's all in the literature. It's all there. And, in fact, a lot of it is on our website, abddiet.com.
Oh, yes, we should explain, since I jumped right in and I forgot to mention that you are, I mentioned you're with the Fine Gold Association, and that website, for everybody just tuning in, is abddiet.com, correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give us a sense, so these artificial dyes especially are, they constrict the bronchial passages, correct? They're called
bronchoconstrictors. Yes. Not having a science background, I don't think I could delve into it too much further, but particularly in the allergy literature, You'll see a lot of references to that. And it's pretty well acknowledged. But, you know, the allergy literature is not always read by the pediatrician. And the neurology literature is not always read by the allergist. You know, so there's loads and loads of information out there. But the information that the public hears about very often is the information promoted by the industry that has something to gain. And, you know, you were talking a little earlier about all the terribly expensive advertisements for junk food. And most of what you see advertised is junk food because that's where the profit is. And I don't know about you, but I haven't noticed any TV ads for broccoli lately.
No.
So the more it's advertised, chances are the worse it is.
Yeah, I guess the reason they need to advertise it is to try to convince people they should be eating it.
Right, and another thing, this is a interesting thing, there are some kind of buzzwords that we teach people to watch out for. And if an food is advertised as being fun, that usually means they cannot think of anything good to say.
Right.
So it doesn't really have any redeeming value. So they tell you that it's fun. And it used to be that it had vitamin C added. You know, that was the thing. Oh, it's and I think they still do that. Oh, this junky stuff is okay because we added a little pinch of vitamin C.
Oh, boy, which probably can't even absorb given all the other chemicals that are
in
there.
I would be a bit surprised, absolutely.
So I'm reading your book, and for people that are just new to all of this, a couple of things for asthma that people probably aren't aware of is the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Drugs has noted a whole bunch of bronchoconstrictors from red dye 2, red dye 3, red dye 4, and we just talked about red dye 3 is still used in maraschino cherries, red dye 6, blue dye 1, blue dye 2, blue dye, yellow dye number 5, which is the big one, and then which is also used in all sorts of ibuprofen and, like you just mentioned, Ritalin and other medications, which... Do we really care if our pill is white or if it's blue or yellow?
Right, and if you want to put coloring on a pill, why not use a natural source color? Minerals can produce many colors. In fact, a nurse once asked me, she said, well, how do you know whether the dye or the coloring on the pill is natural or not? I said, well, you can look in the physician's desk reference, but what I do is I glance at it. If it's pretty, it's probably artificial. If it's an ugly color, it's probably natural.
Right. If
there's nothing scientific about that, but it often pans out.
Right. And then the last thing I would say probably with asthma for people to be aware of is MSG, and we haven't really talked about that yet.
Yes, MSG is another problem for asthmatics, and oh my goodness, the amount of MSG in our food supply is staggering. I mean, people, I was shocked when I found out how much more widespread it is today than it ever was. And you know, one of the worst culprits as far as MSG is the school cafeteria. There is no restriction on how much MSG can be put in a food. And MSG is a very sneaky chemical. A lot of times companies will use names that are similar or that are really forms of MSG. The names are often very similar to each other. They disguise MSG under many, many names. And one of the most typical ones would be autolyzed yeast or yeast product or yeast extract. When people shop, they really should glance at the ingredient label. And if you're buying a loaf of bread or a roll, then yeast is supposed to be on there because yeast makes the flour and the product rise. If you're buying a can of soup, soup doesn't have to rise.
Right.
And the likelihood that they're using nutritional yeast, I think, is about zero.
Right.
So that means that the soup that says it has yeast or autolyzed yeast, and it may even say no MSG on the front. It has MSG's evil twin, MSG's cousin. And another sad thing that people often don't realize is many of these products are sold in natural food stores, and they're sold as being all natural.
Yes.
So when you're looking, meatless products very, very often are filled with MSG.
Yes, the soy substitutes and the vegetarian meat substitutes.
Gravies, rice pilaf, anything where meat would be a factor is particularly vulnerable. And why? Because they can put much less meat in a chicken soup and make it taste very similar
mm-hmm.
if they load it up with MSG.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what MSG has been linked with? Obesity.
Mm-hmm.
I have a ingredient list of some of the things in a typical school lunch program, and I'm looking at the ingredients in the school lunch hamburger. The first ingredient, thank goodness, is ground beef. They do have some of that. And then it's followed by 6 different versions of MSG and 2 sugars. Yeah, and then their pork rib patty. This is unbelievable. 12 different forms of sugar and 4 MSG clones in a pork rib patty. Now, 12 different forms of sugar, is this a dessert? No, this is an entree being fed to kids. And when they don't use, well, they do use MSG, they also use high fructose corn syrup, which, in addition to MSG, high fructose corn syrup, as I'm sure you know, has been linked with obesity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, when we look at this, it's less and less surprising why we have so much obesity when we see these kids going to school in the morning eating their Doritos with MSG.
Mm-hmm.
So MSG starts pumping out insulin, which then starts creating insulin resistance and diabetes and obesity in children and adults as well.
Yes.
It's that is amazing. Anything else like that in the school lunch program we aren't aware of?
Well, my favorite, I guess even more my favorite than the hamburger, is the cheese quesadilla. Now, I'm not going to even attempt to read you the ingredients because you and I would be here all day long. A cheese quesadilla. Now, you tell me, Julie, it's a tortilla, some cheese, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little oil in the pan or something.
Yeah, okay. A little salt.
This thing, it takes an entire page to list the ingredients in a cheese quesadilla. Of course, it has artificial coloring and artificial flavor, but it also has cheddar-flavored mozzarella cheese substitute and mozzarella cheese type flavor.
What?
Now, you and I have been doing this for a while. I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I don't know what the stuff is that's in the food. And you know what? I really think it's reached a point when you have an ingredient list that is just pages of unpronounceable chemicals. I think it has stopped being a food.
Yes.
And I think it's something. I don't know what it is, but it's a thing in my opinion. So children are eating these weird things that have no benefit and that can only hurt them.
Now, do parents have any idea what's going on in the school lunches?
No, because they'll see on the menu cheese quesadilla and they'll think, oh, that's nice, or meatloaf. Oh, you know.
Right, and they'll think
good.
Of the way they make.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, you know, when you see hamburger, you have a mental image
mm-hmm.
of a hamburger with
right.
the bun, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't realize that in a misguided effort to save money, the schools have bought the cheapest of the cheapest that they can buy. And they think they're saving money. Actually, in the long run, it's costing them a huge amount of money to deal with the learning problems and the behavior problems that result. But I think what goes on with people's minds is they see, you know, macaroni and cheese or hamburger or pork patty or whatever, and it looks like food.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll eat it, and it might even taste like food. So they've fooled their eyes
mm-hmm.
into thinking it's food. They may have even fooled their taste buds. But what they don't realize is you can't fool your body.
Mm-mm.
When it comes down, it knows, hey, this ain't food.
right. And the liver's overworking and all
Absolutely.
The systems. And, ugh.
And they're bringing chemicals into their body which are causing not only the liver but their whole system to work harder. Their
yes.
body has to work very hard to deal with a steady diet of these chemicals. Now, the child who is eating this stuff on a regular basis probably has a variety of health problems.
Mm-hmm.
He may have asthma.
Mm-hmm.
He may have ear infections, bedwetting, sleep disorders, depression, etc. Now, you take a child who's already having a hard time coping, and when his behavior or his learning isn't working well, what happens? Oh, let's add some more chemicals to his system.
Right. Let's reward him with the only area that we can, which is a little food, make him feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start adding all this junk, and then, of course, we just have a vicious cycle.
That's right. And then the child gets diagnosed as having a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the diagnosis that's saying, gee, you know, maybe if we feed the child food, he'll do well. Suddenly, there's this mysterious so-called brain disorder called ADHD, and what is the solution? Give him powerful drugs.
Right.
Well, I'm sure you read recently the FDA is requiring the pharmaceutical companies to list side ingredients, and they will include death.
Wow.
Sudden death, strokes, heart problems, aggression, psychotic behavior, mania, hallucinations, seizures, vision problems, and stunted growth.
Mm.
This is what's given to these sick kids whose bodies just aren't even getting the basic stuff they need.
Right, and then their system has to process all of that as everything.
That's
and,
right.
You know, of course, there's always important reasons for medical intervention when there's no other solution, but,
sure.
You know, there's plenty of research out there, like you're just describing, showing how these artificial additives and ingredients cause problems.
Absolutely.
Why don't we start with the easy things first?
I couldn't agree more, and we certainly are not opposed to the use of medication, not at all, but all we're saying is this. Look, you see a child and he has symptoms. Let's look for the cause.
Right.
Now, we know that synthetic food additives are a huge factor. However, they're not the only factor. The child whose grandma died, he may be having trouble focusing. He may be acting up in school. Or a pet has died. A child who has food or environmental allergies may appear to have ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
A child who has sensory integration problems or vision deficits, they can appear to have these. A child who doesn't get enough sleep will act up and may appear to have them. And there's even a very interesting book about how teething, which doesn't stop in toddlerhood, teething goes on, you know, through a child's life. For some children, teething actually can trigger these sorts of things. There are so many things. Fragrances can set a child off.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. So for people that, by the way, that are just tuning in, you are listening to Jane Hersey, author of Why Can't My Child Behave? And you are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. And I'm Julie Matthews. And so let's talk a little bit about those fragrances, because here we have a substance that you don't eat. So people think, okay, well, I'm not going to eat this, so it's safe.
That's right. And, you know, one allergist came up with a quote that I just really love. He said, if you wouldn't drink it, don't smell it. So he's talking about perfumes. You know, if you wouldn't drink the stuff, don't smell it. It gets into your body. In fact, it gets into your body very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many products, consumer products and toys, and things like markers and even crayons, where fragrances are added to them. Why? Well, because it sets one product apart from another, and another reason is because it's very, very cheap. Now, if these fragrances and perfumes were actually made from rose petals, they wouldn't be cheap, but even expensive perfumes today are made primarily from petroleum, and that's what artificial colors are made from and the preservatives we eliminate, petroleum. So a company can use fragrance at a very, very small cost to them and make their product seem different than the next. So when you plug something into the wall and it gives out a fragrance, I would call it a smell.
Yes.
Or, you know, you buy the cleaning product with this miracle stuff and it has fragrance, or you spray this stuff on your furniture and instead of covering over the odors, it claims to make it go away. You know, anything that has an obvious smell, with the exception of things like, vinegar or fresh flowers, you know, some of the old country things are kind of smelly. But most of the things that have a fragrance are things that it would be best to stay away from. And so often you'll see potpourri in a classroom or a plug-in or, children, even young girls wearing perfume or teachers' perfume or scented markers. Now, that's bad enough, Julie, but you know what's coming down the road?
What?
Fragrances being applied to food packaging.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? You mean
so
like
the company can make more money with using a inexpensive technology. Yeah, so down the line, it's been predicted for 2007, you go in a supermarket and there's that little green plastic basket with strawberries and you pick it up and, oh, it smells, oh, the strawberries smell wonderful. Well, you're not going to know if it's the strawberries or the basket. They can actually impregnate packaging materials with fragrances that will give off these odors.
Oh, that's so awful.
So it won't be just the detergent aisle that chemically sensitive people will have to stay away from. It'll be the whole store.
Yeah, and then
it goes forth.
And then it's laden on the little basket that the strawberries are inside of.
Sure.
So goodness knows how much you're going to get into the strawberries.
Oh, absolutely. And the packaging material, the cookie package will smell like chocolate. And there are fragrances that you can buy that smell like waffle cones. And you can even buy candles that smell like waffle cones. One innovative company in Japan has found a way to extract vanilla fragrance from an unusual source, and they expect to use the fragrance in candles and shampoos. What is the unusual source? And I kid you not, it's cattle dung.
No.
Doo-doo. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they found out.
Actually,
that it
cattle
had
dung,
in it that
and it's they should just use it in its natural form and be healthier.
Well, you know, I sometimes use that terminology to describe that sort of stuff.
Oh boy, unbelievable!
Well, it's really a scary new world of this. But the good news is that there are some simple things that parents and other consumers can do to stay away from this stuff, and there's an awful lot of good food out there and more of it coming all the time. So we teach people things like take a peek at the package, at the ingredient label. Look and see for the name of a color followed by a number.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that, red 40, yellow 5, blue 1, if you see that, that's a petroleum-based dye. Put it back. You don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And you sure don't want your kids to have it. They don't need carcinogens. They don't need chemicals that cause bronchial problems. They don't need chemicals that cause reproductive damage.
Mm-mm.
You know, they may think that grandparenthood is overrated, but don't go giving it to your children.
So for those people, so there's also the other two things we didn't touch on were BHA and BHT or any of those preservatives. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about those because sometimes the colors are pretty easy, as you can see, blue number, blah, blah, blah. But tell us about some of these preservatives.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Julie. The colors are pretty obvious, and even artificial imitation flavorings are not too hard to find. BHA, BHT, and there's a third one which is very similar called TBHQ. These are based on petroleum. They're petroleum preservatives that are used in tiny amounts, and they preserve food. They keep it around for a very long time. I call them immortal foods because you can make a food appear to be fresh indefinitely if you use enough of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so often hidden in products. You don't, you know, when you read the label, you may see it, but if you do not see these preservatives, BHA, BHT, and TBHQ, it doesn't mean they aren't there. There are many ways that the industry has of getting around it. So, for example, if the shortening that they use to bake the crackers or cookies with already contains the BHT, the baker doesn't have to list it on his label because he only has to list the chemicals that he added himself. Now, with the new trans fat changes that are happening in foods, so many major companies are replacing trans fatty acids and trans fats with different oils, but unfortunately many of the new oils are preserved with TBHQ.
Oh no.
Yeah, and that's also very widely used in frying oil.
Mm.
So when, you know, your kids want fries, In-N-Out Burger on the West Coast and a little chain called Five Guys on the East Coast, we know for sure their fries are free of TBHQ, but most deep French fried things and deep-fried foods in fast food restaurants are not okay.
And what are some of the reactions that people have seen from these preservatives?
Oh, my gosh. You know, the reactions can vary enormously depending upon the individual. The one characteristic that we've noticed when somebody is exposed to one of these additives, the one universal characteristic, whether they're a child or an adult, is that they get upset too easily. They have a short fuse.
Mm.
Beyond that, it can vary. For example, the same additive that could cause my husband to have a 3 or 4 day migraine headache would cause my daughter to become very dreamy, distractible, couldn't make eye contact, out of touch. Another child eating the same thing might get an asthmatic attack, a case of hives, might wet the bed that night, might become aggressive, and might even, some children even have changes in their handwriting.
Wow.
We have examples where kids have actually written backwards when they're exposed to these chemicals, and they don't realize they're doing it.
Wow.
So these additives, and again, most of them are petroleum-derived, these additives can affect any system of your body. They can affect your behavior. They can affect your ability to focus and to learn, and they can have a wide range of health problems, too. So, you know, humans just are going to do better when they eat real food.
Absolutely. And it seems like with all of the new... Tell us about the school, the new soda deal, and how that's affected our kids.
From the frying pan into the fire.
Right.
Yeah, sodas years ago were sweetened with sugar, and then the soft drink industry found out that they could save money and get greater sweetness and have more convenience by using corn syrup. And then they changed corn syrup and tweaked it with a few more enzymes and turned it into high fructose corn syrup, which is people are finally realizing this stuff is bad for you. It doesn't provide energy. It goes straight to your hips. And believe me, when I found that,
didn't take a lot, did it?
I don't buy that stuff anymore. Well, because sugar and all types of sugars have a bad name, and rightly so, and because so many people think that obesity is directly connected with how much sugar you eat, and I'm sure that's true, they have the impression that synthetic sweeteners are healthier. Well, I don't think sugar is good for you, or corn syrup, or high fructose corn syrup. I certainly wouldn't say they're good for you, but compared with something like aspartame, oh man, no contest in my opinion. So, aspartame is one of the additives because it has such a scary history that the Feingold Association is now eliminating. So unfortunately, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, we're going to get healthy sodas in there for the kids. And what they're bringing in is diet soda.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very sad.
So in our last...
Kind of takes your breath away.
I know, it's overwhelming. So in our last few minutes, let's talk a little bit about what the Feingold Association does and how people can get some assistance and information.
Sure.
They can do.
Yeah, what we do, I know all of this sounds really gloomy, but there's a bright side, and that is that whatever you're accustomed to eating, whatever you enjoy and would normally eat, you can continue to do so. Even Cheetos are now available in a natural form, and they are delicious. And Doritos and Tostitos, and there are cake mixes that are all natural from major companies. There are macaroni and cheese mixes and cookies and crackers. There are so many products out there in the supermarket that are free of these additives. So very often, it's just a matter of instead of you picking up the Devil's Food chocolate cake mix, you pick up the dark chocolate fudge, Duncan Hines mix, and it doesn't have artificial flavors. So what the Feingold Association does is we show people how they can find the foods they like but without these chemicals. And we do the research, we do the legwork, and then we publish books listing thousands of acceptable brand name foods. And in our newsletter, we cover things like, for example, we're writing about a caramel corn and cotton candy that you can order that's all natural.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I used to tell people, well, on the Feingold diet, I can eat anything except marshmallows and jelly beans. I can't say that anymore. There are marshmallows and jelly beans that are fine. Now, again, it's not that we're promoting the candy so much as...
Right.
Nobody has trouble finding, you know, green beans. So it's a pretty simple thing to do once you kind of understand a few of the basic pieces of information. How do you find a product that doesn't have artificial colors, flavors, preservatives? So people can read the labels, which is great, or if they really want to learn a lot about it and have our guidance, they can order our materials, the books with thousands of brand name products. We have lots of help on our website, our phone line. We have volunteers to call people. We've been there. We've had kids, and in many cases adults, who have had some very serious problems And we found that the answer was really quite simple. We just changed our grocery shopping list.
Mm.
So we like to share what we've learned with new people so that they don't have to, you know, figure it out on their own.
Wow. And for those that are just kind of new to all of this, the Feingold Association has great emails and the newsletter so that as companies change and, quote, have their new and improved products and now have ingredients that we don't want any longer, they stay up on top of all of that so you don't have to spend all of your time staying on top of your favorite products.
That's right. We publish the books at least once a year. Then we update them 10 times a year, and we also update them through email.
Mm-hmm.
So when a product comes off the list, then we'll tell you about it as soon as we find out. So all of the background work is being done by our volunteers. And then all the family needs to know is, whoops, cross this one out, or yes, I can now have this product.
Yes.
So I'm really a very lazy cook, and I find it quite easy to do.
Yeah, it's really amazing to see the products out there that you just need to know what to look for and what to be aware of, and then it really doesn't take that much effort to find a product that just has the toxic ingredients left out.
Right. Well, you know, when my daughter was little, I always used to have an all-natural lollipop in my purse, so if we went to the bank and the teller handed her one of the Junko ones, I'd pull one out, and you really, if you didn't know, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference if you didn't know which one was the natural. And my daughter would give me the junky one, we'd throw it away, and I'd give her the good one. And it was just not a big deal at all.
Right, right. It, you know, like you said, we don't necessarily encourage tons of candy and soda and cookies and things like that, but at the same time, if that's inhibiting somebody from changing their diet, know
right.
that there are all of those versions that are free of that out there as to start as a starting point. And then
yes, you're absolutely right, and I think this is one of the greatest needs for the average person, and that is a way of eating that isn't going to take away everything they like and that isn't going to be difficult. And there are plenty of diets out there that people say, well, put your child on this diet, you know, don't allow this, don't allow that. Well, you know, a diet that a child hates is going to be a failure.
Right.
And what we want is we want not only for this program to be effective, but we want to present it to our kids in such a way that they'll have no reason to not want to stay on it. I mean, our kids know that if they want a cookie or if they want ice cream, they can get it. Now, what happens is as the child understands, wow, what I eat really makes a difference, and as the family begins to understand that just making some simple changes can make a big difference, they start to get interested in food. And you go back to the same family 6 months later, and they're starting out, they're using whole wheat bread. They're having more fresh vegetables. They're eating brown rice. They, on their own, make these little changes at their own pace. And they stick. I mean, I prefer brown rice over white any day.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I, believe me, I was a convenience food freak years ago. So we get to the same place, but we don't make it hard, and we don't make it a punishment. So
absolutely,
the kids stay with it, and they don't have a problem turning down this stuff. The adults sometimes do.
Yes.
And you know what? It's not an all or nothing deal. If a child's been or an adult has been on the program, and they go out and they occasionally eat something with these additives, they might not even notice a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we encourage it,
right.
But you know, it happens. So you can be relaxed. I'm very careful about what I buy, partly because I just don't want to buy the other stuff. But when we go out to dinner, we just make some educated choices. And then when dinner's over and they bring out the chocolate cake, you know, I don't care what's in it. I'm going to eat it anyway.
Right. Well, it ends up that if your system isn't bombarded,
yes.
I mean, think about it. It's like, I live by a school, so I see kids go to school with sodas and Cheetos for breakfast, then they're having the Lunchables and the, you know, Oreos for lunch and the this for that and the snack and the soda and the, you know, so if you cut all that out and occasionally you have something and you're not totally certain what's in it, every once in a while, you're going to be okay.
Absolutely. And you know what has happened in the past is sometimes a child will be doing well on the program and they'll eat some things that do have these additives in, and because their system is so cleaned out, the parents don't see any reaction and they think, oh, well, I guess the additives don't bother them after all. Well, let me tell you, if they go back to eating the way they were, it won't be long before they're going to go right back to the same symptoms that they were having before.
Right. Well, Jane, as usual, it's wonderful to have you on.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you so much. May I give our website again?
Please.
Thank you. It's ADDDiet.com, ADDDiet.com. There's an awful lot of material on our website. You can request complimentary information, and we're just happy to help you. We've been doing this for 30 years, and we love doing it.
Great, Jane. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to KPOO San Francisco. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant. You can hear this show and any of our past shows available on free download from our website. You can go to realitysandwichradio.com or you can go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon.